Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations in Care, the flagship radio program of the Care Radio Network. The radio program dedicated to covering senior health topics, chronic conditions, and self-care. Using the simple act of conversation, we can create awareness, establish a course of action, and design a community of support. Conversations in Care was created from the many conversations throughout her 18-year involvement as a dementia practitioner, care advocate, and your host, Tammy Newman.
Good morning and welcome to Conversations in Care. Today we have a wonderful guest and such a wonderful topic, how to live well with a chronic illness. And we're talking to Sarah Gorman, who is the author of a book called Despite Lupus, How to Live Well with a Chronic Illness. And before I welcome her onto the show and we talk a little bit more about what it's been like since her diagnosis and how she might be able to help us walk through chronic illness, whether it's lupus and autoimmune, type 1 diabetes, maybe dementia, anything of that nature, where I want to talk with her further about all of that. But before I do that, what I would like to do is I would like to thank my sponsors, because without the sponsors, I would not be able to bring you such wonderful guests and such wonderful topics about how to live well. So I want to thank Thrive Assisted Living, Seniors Blue Book, and you can find Seniors Blue Book online at www.seniorsbluebook.com, Private Duty Network, and Hurricane Marketing Enterprises. And I do want to give a big shout out to Steve, the Hurricane Weiss, because he has been my supporter since day one, 2 years ago, and has really been there to really support me in this journey. So I want to thank him so much for being there with me. So, well, without further ado, let's talk to Sarah. Good morning, Sarah. Thank you for coming on to Conversations in Care this morning.
Good morning, Tammy. It's nice to be here.
Wonderful. So we're going to get right into this. And you were diagnosed with lupus at the age of 26. And I was hoping that you could share with us about your diagnosis and what was going on in your life at that time.
Sure. So as you say, I was 26 at the time, which is right in the heart of when the majority of people are diagnosed with lupus. Most women are diagnosed within their childbearing years, which is right there, 26. That was about 14 years ago now. And at that time, I had been married just 6 weeks, if you can believe it.
Oh, wow.
You can imagine how difficult that was to work a chronic illness into life of newlyweds. It was definitely a third wheel. It was very unwelcomed, and we really didn't know what to do with it. It was a difficult time for us to wrap our head around the fact that we were going to have this chronic illness in tow now that, you know, we had started our life together.
Absolutely, and I think one of the things that you mentioned in your book is that at this time, you know, you get the diagnosis, and you really were kind of fighting this diagnosis in a sense, weren't you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. At 26 years old, I think most of us are feeling pretty invincible and pretty spunky and fiery and ready to take on the world. And I had a fabulous job in television production at the time. I had moved into a management position. I had lots of responsibility. Long hours were required of me, but it was where I was thriving, and I loved it. And I thought, you know, I can see myself here for a long time. Like I said, I was just starting my life with my husband, and we had some serious goals, right? I mean, we were gonna conquer the world, and I didn't have time for lupus. I didn't. And not knowing about the disease, not really understanding what it meant to have a chronic illness, that it was never going to go away.
Right.
It was difficult for me to come to terms with the fact that this wasn't going to go away in 6 weeks, that I was going to have to manage this for the rest of my life.
Well, in really within those first 4 years, you were really kind of almost in denial, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. You know, when I talk to other people who were in my situation who were diagnosed in their 20s at a time when, you know, most of us are diagnosed with a chronic illness and it hits us like a ton of bricks, right? You're blindsided completely because that is not in your trajectory. That's not what you had planned. But when I talk to many people who are in my situation, they say the same thing that I did, which is, well, I understand that most people are really bogged down by this chronic illness. Most people get hit with lupus and they just shrivel up and, you know, can't put two and two together. Well, I was going to be different. I've always been different, right? Those of us who are overachievers and, you know, you follow your dreams and you work hard and you are able to achieve whatever it is you set your mind to. And that's the way I approached lupus. I thought, well, I understand. Everyone else, you know, succumbs to the fatigue and everyone else really struggles with this joint pain. I'm different. I'm not going to do that. So I just figured, you know, if I just push through, if I just keep attacking it just like I do everything else in my life, I will persevere and I will succeed and I will overcome. Unfortunately, it took me 3 or 4 years to realize that's the exact opposite approach you need with a chronic illness, particularly one with lupus.
Well, I think that's kind of a normal response. And I think anybody, okay, I'm going to fight this, you know, because that's kind of the mantra that goes on within our culture. I'm going to fight this disease. I'm going to fight this illness. I'm going to, you know, and I think, you know, sometimes we're then, there's this brick wall that we end up hitting and we have to face some realities about what's going on with this chronic illness. And I'm sure you probably hit that brick wall and started to realize that there were some things that you needed to realize and also some things that you needed to come to terms with when you got at that time. Maybe you could share a little bit about what was going through your mind once you kind of finally realized, okay, I need to kind of maybe work with lupus instead of against it.
Absolutely. And I talk about that so many times in my book, about working with the disease rather than against it. And I feel that is so applicable to so many areas of your life with a chronic illness, whether it's your doctor. You have to work with your doctor, not against them. You know, you have to work with your family and friends who are trying to help rather than fight against the help they're trying to give you. You know, I think with a chronic illness, there's this vulnerability. And at 26 years old, I had never felt vulnerable before. I had never, like I said, I'd never lost a fight. You know, you kind of just persevere and push through until you win. And so I was undoubtedly losing this fight. I was running my body into the ground. My health was really suffering. I couldn't work anymore. I had been told that I had to put pregnancy on hold because it was unsafe for me and it was unsafe for me to try to have children. That was a huge blow, again, having, you know, being early in a marriage and being told that that was just not in the cards right now. That just felt like it was a huge adjustment. And it was an identity crisis because I thought, wow, if all of these things are going to be being taken away from me, my mobility, my hair, my ability to work, my ability to live the way I want to, what else is there? And so I thought, all right, I'm going to have to break this thing down. Because if my identity has been wrapped around my job and my fiery independent self and the way I function, which is, you know, you just push through. Right. If that is no longer me, who am I? How can I learn to contribute in another way? How can I find other ways to feel successful and to feel fulfilled and to turn that vulnerability into something that I'm empowered to, you know, to work with my doctor, like I said earlier? Or how can I be empowered to actually be strategic in the way I live my life so that I'm not fighting lupus, I'm actually working with it and accommodating for the illness.
You know, I think those are some really interesting things because I think it is a true identity crisis when someone is diagnosed with a chronic illness. I think everything that you knew how to do before needs to change, but sometimes coming to terms with how that change is going to work for you and for your diagnosis. I think that's really can be a struggle for many people, and I think that's something that that we may have to dive into deeper at a later time. But I think one of the things too that, you know, as you start to go through the diagnosis of a chronic illness, is that as a patient we need to start to become informed. And I think, you know, sometimes we jump into the bandwagon of learning about the disease, which is great, but I think sometimes you have to become informed about the disease that's living inside of you. So to me, lupus in each person is very different. And I think you have to become an advocate, and you have to understand what's happening to you. And maybe you can share with us how you became informed about your lupus.
Absolutely. You said so many good things in there, one of which is, and I think people have said it for years, but it's been said that if you've seen one case of lupus, you've only seen one case of lupus. And it's absolutely true. So if you have that in the back of your mind when you're dealing with your doctor or other people who are trying to understand what you're going through, you have to remember that their frame of reference is different, because your lupus is different. It's your own, and the manifestations of the disease and the symptoms are your own, and you're the only person who can convey to your doctor particularly and to your friends and family what exactly you're experiencing. So I never realized, certainly as a patient, how much of an advocate I needed to be for myself. I never realized how involved I was going to be. I think most of us with a chronic illness, many of us were very healthy before we were diagnosed. And so our interaction with a doctor was to walk in, you complain about, you know, the headache or sore throat that just came on, and they, you know, you get a Z-Pack and you walk out. And a lot of times most of the conversation is about, oh, I don't know, where you've been on vacation, and nothing dark and dreary, right? Nothing chronic.
Right, right.
And so when I went in for this chronic illness, I kind of expected my relationship to be the same, but that's entirely the opposite. This is the relationship you have with your chronic illness doctors, it is one that has to be managed, and it has to blossom, and it has to grow over time. And, you know, it cannot be combative. It absolutely has to be collaborative. You have to walk into the doctor's office aware of what's going on with your body. You have to have done a little homework. You have to kind of prep for your doctor's appointment to make sure you get all of those questions answered, to make sure that you're going to be able to make it until your next appointment. It takes, like I said, a lot of awareness. It takes a lot of openness and honesty. And I think many of us, if you're like me, it's kind of hard to just lay it all out on the table. It's embarrassing. Yeah. It's hard to do. It can take a lot of time. But unless you're open and completely honest about what's been going on with your symptoms and your illness, and whether you've been following the doctor's orders from the last time, if you're not doing that, your doctor isn't going to have the correct information to give you a proper diagnosis and a proper treatment.
You know, all of that, I think, is just so immensely true. And I think it's almost like you have to learn a new language in regards to how am I going to communicate with my doctor now? Because like you said, you know, oftentimes what we're going into the doctor's office for is, I've got a runny nose, I've got a headache, you know, oh, I fell, so my knee hurts. So some of that's pretty routine when it comes to talking to the doctor. But I think when it comes to something like lupus, when so many of the symptoms are strange, or you may have one symptom now, but then you won't have another symptom until 2 years later. So trying to put those puzzle pieces together is very difficult. And, you know, one of the things that you talk about a lot within this book is really how you can track your symptoms and how you can really be prepared when you go into that doctor's office. And I don't know if there's anything simple that you can kind of share with us in regards to, you know, tracking those symptoms or writing this stuff down so that you are prepared and informed about what you want to say to your practitioner.
Well, I think being informed and kind of being enlightened by your symptoms and understanding how your disease is manifesting itself, I think that's one of the most, again, empowering things you can do as a patient. Because once you know what's happening and once you see how your disease is developing, you can kind of see the patterns and you can, again, advocate for yourself. Right. I think it's very tricky to walk into the doctor and say, you know, I've had a fever for I don't know how long. And I said that myself, right? I've had a fever for I don't know how long. And he says, well, how high has it been and how long? And I said, oh, I don't even know.
Right.
I don't know, right? I mean, how typical is that? Instead, what I created was a simple Excel spreadsheet, and I listed the symptoms down one side of the piece of paper, and on the top, I listed the days of the week. And so in each box, I was able to notate whether I had a fever and how high it was. And so then I walk into the doctor, just taking this one example, and I say, I've had a fever, and he says, how long? And I say, for exactly 2 weeks. And he says, what were the temperatures? And I said, it's always been over 101. Done, right? I mean, there's no fudge room. It's in black and white. And what also happens when you have it in black and white is that you no longer doubt yourself. There's no question as to whether you've been feeling crummy or awful. It is right there that you have had excruciating joint pain or debilitating fatigue, so much so that you've had to take a nap every day for 3 weeks or on and off for the entire week. You're fueling your ability to be confident and assert yourself, so that when you're, you know, a family member says, well, I don't understand why you can't go out tonight, or I don't understand why you're not going to be able to meet up this weekend. You look at your chart and remind yourself, because you've been feeling really crummy, you know, for the last month. And that's all the evidence you need.
You know, I think one of the things that I see with doing this as well, it's a couple things. One, we have to learn how to be patient, because what the doctor's looking for and what we think they're looking for are two different things. So kind of learning, you know, maybe doctor speak and understanding that, okay, I need to know what your temperature, how high your temperature was, for how long, how many days, that type of thing. So, you know, being patient with yourself to understand that you have to figure out this new language. And then I think the other thing that I'm hearing from you when you say this, by, you know, whether it's you're writing down paragraphs or sentences of how you feel, or tracking it, like you said, with the Excel spreadsheets, you've now really empowered yourself to really go in and say, okay, doc, this is here, right here. I've written down every day what I'm going through, the things that I'm feeling, you know, the different parts of my body that hurt, or the headache that I've had for weeks on end, that type of thing. And I think that in itself is a very empowering act to be able to help yourself get well.
It absolutely is. Absolutely. And I think with a chronic illness, there's this loss of control that undoubtedly happens, right? Because all of a sudden your body, particularly an autoimmune disease where your body is literally attacking itself, you can no longer count on your body to come through, right? Because it's literally attacking itself. It's breaking down and attacking organs and systems that are supposed to be working for you, not against you. And so all of a sudden, you're the person that has to say, all right, how are we going to make this happen? How are we going to get through this? How am I going to turn this on its head and be proactive instead of just reactive and on the defensive? And I think going into the doctor is just a perfect example of where you can take ownership of your appointments and actually walk in and be as specific as you can. And, you know, just like any other relationship that you manage, you learn how to communicate with your doctor over time, how best you guys can parlay, how you can talk back and forth so that you are getting the answers you need and he's getting the information he needs. I think another trap we fall into, I know I did at the beginning, was to just kind of listen to my doctor and let him talk and let him you know, throw out all these things that we were going to do and how we were going to proceed and the prescriptions I was going to be on. And I don't think I ever questioned what was really happening. And I don't mean question as in, well, why are you doing that? You know, more as in, I would like to understand what our plan is here. What is the effect you're going for? Why are we prescribing that drug over this one that I've heard about, you know, from right. my other friends or whatever? I find that it's so important to never leave a doctor's appointment without understanding completely what is happening. And, you know, my parents are, as they grow older, their doctor's appointments seem to increase, unfortunately. And right. I'm forever asking them, I'll say, well, you know, how was your appointment? Oh, it's great. They gave me this drug and we're going to do this. And I'll say, well, why? Do you know what the reason is? Well, no, I don't know why.
Right.
And I just think, well, you need to march back in there, Mom, and go find out why you're doing this. But I think it's really important to just understand what the plan is, right? And prescribe drug X, right? And you say, okay, what is the intended effect? What are you hoping that's going to do? And then you can say, you know, if your appointments are 3 weeks apart or 3 months apart, you can say, okay, what should I expect to happen between now and the next appointment? And he'll say whatever, he or she will say whatever. And then you say, okay, what if that doesn't happen? What am I supposed to do? You really have to set yourself up with a strategy to get you from one appointment to the next, and thereby informing yourself so that you're not on pins and needles waiting for that next appointment to right. figure out, man, what is he going to say about what just happened? Because you've actually asked the doctor ahead of time what the plan is for if X happens or if Y happens.
You know what? I absolutely love those questions. Those are things that I didn't really think of. You know what's the intended effect? What should I expect to happen between now and then? And if that doesn't happen, what are we going to do about it? And I think mm-hmm. those are great questions to really help you to, you know, to start understanding the disease that you have, start understanding the medication, start understanding, you know, what works well for you, what doesn't work well for you. And, you know, I think you've talked really extensively here about, you know, working with your doctor and him being, you know, part of your team and really working with how you can almost help guide him to guide you in a lack of
Absolutely.
A better
term. Absolutely. And I mean, no disrespect to the medical professional. Obviously, I have my doctors up on pedestals, right? I mean, I appreciate so much what they've done for me, but I do realize that they have an expectation for me to participate.
Right,
and
right.
I think if we're asking the most of our doctor, if we're asking them to be efficient and effective and have all the answers and be knowledgeable, I think it's only natural that they expect us to be efficient and effective in the way we ask our questions and in the way we try to get information, and that we come prepared and we come ready to work, right, during our appointment to get the answers we need and to walk away satisfied.
Well, and I think, you know, so often I will hear people, you know, just in general saying, you know, I'm not sure that I really like my doctor, you know, and I think sometimes it's really upon us to make sure that we're communicating everything that we can to that doctor, because that doctor, you know, he doesn't have the crystal ball to say, oh, yep, this is what you have. Sometimes it takes a lot of work to get to that diagnosis. And if we're not telling them things or sharing with them, okay, yeah, that medicine worked. Okay, let's really get down and dirty with this. You know, did the medicine work? Were there side effects? You know, oh my gosh, I couldn't eat because my stomach was just in cramps and pain. So, you know, being able to, and it takes a lot of work and sometimes some inner work to get to the point where you can sit down and really talk face-to-face, one-on-one about the things that are happening. You know, and I think these are some great things in regards to how you can work with, you know, the medical practitioners, which is one part of your team. And I would say that another part of your team is probably family and friends, and really working with them and helping them to probably understand what you're going through. And then also, you know, asking for help. And I think that is probably one of the most difficult things that we as humans can do is ask for help, especially when we, you know, especially if someone's built like you, hey, I'm going to hit this head on and I'm going to fight this, you know, but looking at how can I ask for help? And I'm wondering if you can share with us how you've been able to do that.
Well, I'm still working on it for sure. It's a challenge every day, but there are some things that I have just, you know, adopted in terms of the way I function and the way I do approach other people and ask for help. I think, you know, there's a chapter in my book devoted to it, and I think it's called asking for and accepting help. And I think, first of all, those are two very different things. You can ask all you want for help, but you also have to accept it gracefully. And I think those are, you know, two separate things. I also think an entire book could be written about accepting help. It's such a challenge. I think one thing, though, that I've really tried to work with on myself is, you know, putting aside those feelings that, you know, asking for help is selfish or asking for help is a sign of weakness. I try to tell myself, you know, you're actually being smart about it. You're actually enabling yourself to function normally. If you ask for a babysitter to come over in the afternoon to help with your kids, that is not a sign of weakness, or that, you know, sometimes used to go through my brain that, well, I can't care for my children on a daily basis without, you know, taking a two-hour nap in the afternoon. So that means that someone has to come in, whether it's my husband or my sister or, you know, a babysitter, to come in and fill that gap.
Right.
That's actually not being weak by seeking out help. It's being strategic. It's enabling me to be a phenomenal mom, right, and be normal,
right,
and active and present. And it's enabling me to wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning and get my daughter ready for school and then take my other preschooler to school later on in the day and do everything I need to do. I take that nap and I can pick up right where I left off. I can have a great dinner. I can read stories to them at night. We can do baths and showers and we can do everything normal, right, if I just extend myself, put my pride aside and ask for that help in order to get through the day. You're actually reinstilling normalcy into your life by just putting your ego aside and being strategic and smart about how to accommodate for your illness.
You know, I love that because I think for many of us it is trying to take that ego and setting it, you know, to the side for a little while when we're asking for help and trying to be strategic in how we care for ourselves and our family. Well, Sarah, we're getting to that point where I need to start wrapping things up. But before you go, there's a couple of things I do want you to share with us. I want you to tell us about not only your book, but there's a product that you have created that can help those with managing medications. And I was hoping that you can tell us a little bit about the book and also about those products.
Sure. So my book, as you mentioned earlier, Despite Lupus, How to Live Well with a Chronic Illness, I wrote it several years after I'd been diagnosed. It was after the point where I had started making some major changes in my life. I had let go of my career. I had put my plans on hold for pregnancy because of the medication I had to go on. I had cut off all of my hair because I had lost, almost all of it. And I thought, you know what? I need to just start clean. I need to start over and start fresh. And I need to start, like we talked about earlier, empowering myself and taking steps to live well despite lupus. Right. So I wrote this book. It kind of outlines the steps that I took to live well with a chronic illness. There are things that I reference still today. I go back and think, all right, I need to ask for help. I need to do a better job of communicating with my husband about what I need or what I don't need. And, you know, that goes back to help. You kind of have to show people how you want them to insert themselves into your life with lupus. Otherwise, they are bound and determined to insert themselves in places that you don't want. So I cover a lot of that in my book. about communicating with others, about how to present yourself with lupus so that you get everything you want out of life, right? So that you don't have to stop and take 10 steps backwards. Sure, you might have to take a sidestep, and your path might not lead exactly where you thought it would, but it can still be pretty darn great. Right. So that's my book. And subsequent to that, I, you know, did quite a bit of speaking and around the country with Lupus Foundation of America and different other lupus organizations after I published my book. And in traveling around, I realized that there were a lot of people that felt just like I did, which was, gosh, this medication, all the pills and the organization that it takes to manage the medication regimen, it takes a lot out of you. Not only is it hard to organize because there's a lot and it's 2 and 3 times a day sometimes, it also can be a bit of a downer, right? You are, you know, for me, I was 26 years old and all of a sudden I was a walking pharmacy. I had, a personal relationship with my pharmacist where I don't even know when the last time I had picked up a prescription was.
Right.
And I realized that looking at all this medication was having a negative effect on the way I felt about my chronic illness. And I thought, you know, there has to be something better than this terrible plastic clunky pill box that, you know, grandmothers are using. And here I am in my 20s and I'm taking this thing out at work and taking it out at restaurants. And I thought there has to be a prettier, more stylish way to do this. And I couldn't find anything. I found a little pill box, but that, you know, carried about half of the pills that I take in one morning alone. So I came up with what I call pill bags. They are fashionable fabric pill bags that are in fun colors. They have shiny chic hardware, and they organize your pills. They are pill organizers, and they're available on Amazon and also my website. And they're just trying to add a little dose of style to what is otherwise, you know, a routine that is drudgery and can kind of bring you down. But I'll tell you, I have one on bedside right now that is looking cute and is keeping my pills ready and secure.
You know what? I think that's, you know, I love to hear how you really transitioned your life from, you know, what you were doing before to something that is just as equally wonderful and really helping other people by, you know, giving them some advice and, you know, how to manage the illness, how to, you know, I agree with you. One of the hardest things when my son was diagnosed with type 1 is, okay, we've got a lot of stuff to carry. And, you know, I was like, he's 12 when he was diagnosed, you know, it's not like I can carry a diaper bag around anymore. So I had to figure out, you know, how are we going to, you know, and now the next thing is he's a boy, so he doesn't want something pink and frilly, which they have all sorts of things for girls, but what can I do for him? So I'm glad that you have really tried to, you know, we all still want to be fashionable, no matter, you know, how we feel on the inside. We still want to feel, you know, super wonderful on the outside. And, you know, so I love that you've been able to provide those things for people. Now, one last question for you is, how can people find you?
Sure. I have a website. It's you can go to www.sarahgorman.com. You can find my book there. You can find my pill bags. You can also go directly to despitelupus.com. You can also find my pill bags as well as the book on pillfold.com. And any of those three ways, again, my book and bags are available on Amazon as well as my website. We also have about 10 retailers across the country that are carrying the bags, so that's been very exciting. And, you know, I blog about lupus and what it's like to have a chronic illness about 3 times a week, so I welcome questions and comments and lots of feedback and interaction on the blog.
Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a pleasure having you on and talking about these things. I definitely want to have you back on. I think there's some other things that we can really dig deep into. So hopefully you're up for it, and we'll look at a time where you can come back.
Thank you. That would be wonderful. That'd be great.
It was a pleasure having you on the show. So thank you for spending some time with us this morning.
Thank you.
I want to thank everyone for joining in the conversation this morning. This has been a great, great conversation. And I think this is a conversation that translates well for so many different chronic illnesses, not just lupus, not just type 1 diabetes, but there's so many different diseases and things that happen to us that we can really take some information from her book, Despite Lupus. So if you have someone that's fighting lupus, or if you know of someone that has a chronic illness and they need some help kind of working past some of those fears and feeling vulnerable, I think this is a great book for you to check out. I want to also thank, before we end the show, I do want to thank my sponsors once again, Thrive Assisted Living, Private Duty Network, The Seniors Blue Book, and Hurricane Marketing Enterprises. Without them, I would not be able to bring Conversations in Care to you. I want to thank everyone for listening, and be well.